Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome to the show. It's almost 9:09 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Gil Almquist, Washington County Commissioner, is with me today.
Good morning.
Yeah, he forgot his micro. Now he's got it. We're here. Yeah, how you doing, Gil?
Good to see you, man. It's great. I love waking up to some cloudy skies because I always remember the 100 days of sunshine we always get from June to August, what have you. But
I can't remember the number exactly, but I think St. George traditionally 300 out of 365 days of the year are sunny.
Yes.
So
it's an allure to many, and yet I love the change in seasons and the weathers.
If you have never lived in an area that is cloudy all the time, I lived in Moscow, Idaho. The clouds rolled in about October. They didn't leave till April. And I that was the exact amount of time I lived there because I had to get out because it was so gloomy. That's when we moved to southern Utah. That was back in the early 90s. And you take for granted how beautiful the sunshine is all the time. I'm good with storms. I'm good with rain and snow occasionally. But when it's over, we need that sun back out.
Yep. I served a mission in Germany, and for 2 years, we had a layer most days. And yet, once summer came and all the flowers and everything were out, you appreciated that sun.
I will say this. We were in Europe this summer, went through Netherlands, Germany, France, Switzerland. Sunshine the whole time except one day. One day we had rain. But it was June. It was summertime.
Yes, perfect.
So it was beautiful.
I bet.
I know you were in Germany this summer as well, weren't you?
Yes. My wife and I went back to some old haunts and saw some new things and visited some friends back there. And never had my luggage delivered for 11
years. No, really?
They never got it to me. It was, it was kind of interesting.
So had to buy some to-go clothes? Or?
Yes, and I told Jill, I said, I'm going to write a book on how to spend 11 days in Europe with your backpack.
With no clothes. Well, they say, and this is a little travel hack, if you have like medicines that are absolutely crucial, you know, I have restless leg medicine. I can't sleep without it. Take it in your carry-on. Keep it with you at all times, because if you trust them to get your luggage to you, as Gil found out, it ain't happening necessarily. Well,
what's funny is they would always tell us where the bag was, but Jill had put an air tag in mine. So when they said, it's in Paris, we said, no, it's in Detroit.
Detroit and Paris, not exactly close together.
We found out they didn't know where it was either. But we got it eventually on the day we came home.
So my brother had left his phone behind when we went to Europe. He was traveling with us, and they grabbed it and sent it to him because we were going to be there 8 or 9 days, and he wanted his phone, and it was the same kind of thing. They kept saying, oh, it's here. Well, it wasn't really there. Oh, it's here. No, it wasn't really there. And you would think they'd be smart enough to know, okay, it's a phone. They're probably going to know where it really is instead of lying to you.
But yeah.
Kind of sad.
Well, it worked out. It was a lot of fun and a nice little funny story to tell.
Yeah.
But loved it. But today's weather's perfect for what's coming up as maybe a hot summer.
Yeah, it could be. And we do have usually May, June are very dry. Late July, mid July, we start getting monsoons. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we'll get some of those and the rains will come and not too much lightning, but lots of moisture.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed, right?
Exactly.
So Gil has been, you've been traveling, right?
Well, there's been a lot of county business, and of course we've traveled up to the legislature a lot. I give credit to Commissioner Snow, who's one of the Utah Association of Counties executives, one of the vice presidents there, and here in April we'll move up the ladder a bit until eventually he's president of U.S.
Nice.
But the legislature, that was a lot of travel. Then D.C.
You went back east.
Yep. We go to Washington, D.C. for what's called the National Association of Counties. And
NACO, to be
NACO, yes, with a C. And we enjoy that because we get to bounce ideas off of what other counties are doing. And I've got to tell you, there's a whole new spirit about Washington, D.C.
Really?
And getting things done. And you still see those that are just the naysayers. But there's a lot moving. And quite frankly, the ones I like talking to are people on the street. And even though that is a highly blue area, the people on the street there are saying, hey, you know, I feel like the economy has to make some adjustments. We have to look at changes in what government efficiencies are there. And over the last 4 years, I can tell you, from the issues that we have here locally that are affected by Washington, D.C., there was very little progress being made. It was slow down. No, you can't do that.
Right.
And believe me, the citizens of this county need to know we are fighting all the time from coast to coast to get little things done here, which mean a lot to them in their lives. You know, building dams, building a short little road to help ease traffic, and you name it. There's been a roadblock, but now finally, with the help of our senators and new congressmen, you know, we are making progress.
There was a national poll out yesterday afternoon. The approval rating for the Democratic Party right now is at an all-time low. And I don't mean all-time like in the last decade, all-time ever low of 29%. And it's interesting that I was talking with a guy from NBC News Radio, Rory O'Neill, and he said the big movement is not Republicans, because they never, you know, Republicans never approved of the Democratic Party. The big move is the Democrats themselves don't approve of their own party, because they're basically siding with, oh, I don't know, Venezuelan gang members and stuff, and, yeah, and trying to fight the administration. And they realize that's not really the side we want to be on.
I know this, that Americans deep in their heart, no matter what party they are, what race, what affinities they have, it doesn't matter, they still know right from wrong.
Yeah.
And it's right to say we are a lawful people, we believe in fairness, but we just cannot be taken advantage of anymore by us not only saving the world, but and I have said, Andy, to many people, when you're on a plane and you have that series of instructions given to you by the flight attendants on safety, mm-hmm, there's one thing that really stands out to me relative to what we're doing in our country now, to what we've done in our county forever, but that is this. It says, if in the case of losing cabin pressure, a mask will drop down from the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
But the sentence that really means a lot to me is it says, put your own mask on first before helping someone else. And America needs to say, we're putting our mask on first. But before we make the taxpayers of our great country pay to have everyone else put their mask on when they're not really willing to.
Yeah. That needs to go on the wall back here. Put your own mask on first, right?
Exactly.
I like it. I'm curious, in your meeting with the National Association of Counties, what it was like, what do you glean from, I know there's excitement and optimism, but say you have the county that has, I don't know, in South Carolina, you know, that is on the coast there. What can you glean from a county that is that different from where we are? I mean, we definitely have some unique things about Washington County, especially geographically and topography.
Well, I'm on one of the committees, and I can say that it's broken down into many committees with sometimes 50, 60 members from counties all over the country, that it forms a mix. I happen to be on energy, environment, and land use.
Ah.
And so land use hits home because we have so much federal land here. So people from South Carolina don't get it. But when we are there, we explain it to them so that they can understand what you have to get.
They're probably kind of shocked, aren't they?
They are. And when you tell them, well, we have all these hoops to jump through. When you want to build a dam or you want to, you know, have some road built, you talk to all of your private landowners or maybe a few people or government-owned land, very rare, and you just build it. Now, out here, we have to have layers upon layers upon layers of approvals, and they can always stall you and say, oh, well, we didn't look at this. It'll be another year. You know, we've been trying to build Warner Valley Reservoir for now 9 years. And it's always some little hiccup from, or not even a hiccup, a determined, I believe, delay tactic by the BLM, or who have been great partners on that, by the way. But when you get back to D.C., it's been a slowdown. Well, look at this. Well, no, this is, And I know that Zach Renstrom, the head of the Washington County Water Conservancy District, and his team literally pulled their hair out because they wondered, okay, what's next? We've done everything you've asked for. And but to answer your question, we pass resolutions that then get sent up to the congressmen and women, and they then see, oh, well, this is the position of NACO. Okay. These are the counties. And we pass these resolutions with a broad spectrum of party because some things are just right. And that's the impact that we have back there. But if we're silent, if we don't go, then it gets off the rails. And they don't understand the West.
I think that that would, you know, the National Association of Counties recommending something would pull a lot of weight to a congressperson because they would go, okay, this isn't just one nut job who says, hey, you need to, you know, not let them build a tower in my county or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's an actual, all the counties got together and decided this and then recommended it. That would pull a lot of weight.
Well, in the United States, there's 3,069 counties.
Wow. Okay.
And approximately 2,000 of them will show up for a conference. And they might be members and just not come for whatever reason. I mean, North Carolina has 100 counties. Texas has more. And they don't.
Wait, North Carolina is like a third the size of Utah.
Yes.
And it has how many? It has three times, almost four times as many counties?
Yes. Yeah. We get more done with 29 counties. Of course, they have more population, but still a lot of it is rural in North Carolina. In fact, driving from Banner Elk to Boone, you will drive through five counties. And it's only about 40 miles apart.
Wow.
But my point being is that when you have that many counties show up and they agree to certain things, it's a fair vote, majority rule. So if you're in a committee and you say, hey, we want to look at certain ramifications of coal or oil, there's going to be detractors saying, no, it's the answer is solar and wind. And we know that is not the answer. That is a part of the solution, but it is not the total answer. Actually, the answer will be nuclear if we can ever get the price down. But the point is that those resolutions are taken seriously, and you get a senator or their staff and say, well, what did NACO say about that? And that's nice to do. Prior 4 years, it was a horrible show. Now it's changed. There's a new sheriff in town, if you want to say that. And my bias is obviously towards freedom for expression of companies, of things to do, of use of land in a reasonable way, and we're seeing that.
So now that the legislature has ended, what kind of things are you looking at? Did they take your recommendations? Are there some things that are going to affect us here locally in Washington County?
On the national level?
Well, national or local.
And local.
Yeah.
Locally, a big shout out to our Sunshine Caucus.
Yeah.
They know our issues. And when they go up north, they're outnumbered, but they have the skill and facts that we help provide because they often say, hey, help me on this. You know, and what is the county? What are the actual numbers? And so we had some victories in transient room tax issues where we have more flexibility to use those funds with more brick and mortar versus just advertisement. People say, why are you forced to use 47% of all transient room tax generated by tourists and others on advertising? People know we're here. Well, you can't stop advertising. Look at Coke, McDonald's, others, right? They people know that brand, but they still advertise.
Yeah.
But we want the flexibility to pick where we advertise and how much and still have the greater impact and not look down and say, oh my gosh, we got to do this because we have to reach that level. So that was a victory for us.
Nice.
One of the losses, and our wonderful representative from the eastern side of the county, Representative Joe Elison, has had a bill to fund EMS, emergency services.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, it was right at the finish line, and they didn't address it. I was just talking with him about this last night. I'm saying it would have solved EMS statewide. It wasn't a heavy lift. For whatever reason, it just didn't quite make it at that gong at midnight. And he said, I said, what's our chances? Can we bring it up in another interim session? Can we bring it up? And he said, in May, we have another one. And I said, well, please let us help get that across the finish line in May. that would have been a huge lift, and not a huge lift, but I mean a huge benefit to all of us with what emergency services we need, especially in rural areas of the state. Mm-hmm. That was a victory. There were some defeated bills, thanks to Representative Walter and others, that would have taken away local land use authority. We need to be able to say what goes where and what makes sense for our county and not have it, bless their hearts, but we can't have them dictate that from Salt Lake.
Yeah, we had Neil Walter on last Monday, and he just did a fantastic job of representing why he's there, why the Sunshine Caucus is important. And, mm-hmm. and for people that don't know, that's our group of senators and congresspeople from southern Utah who go up and really face the overwhelming odds of that population right. center of the Wasatch Front.
So true, and they, as Don Ipsen says, Senator Ipsen says, we punch above our weight, and that's
nice.
Very true.
Yeah. All right, well, people are going to ask you, so I'm going to ask it right up front, Northern Corridor, Zone 6, all yeah. that stuff, where are we at?
For the first time, face-to-face with Senator Lee, face-to-face with Senator Curtis, who's coming in town on Thursday. That is high priority to them.
And by
them.
The way, we'll have John on the show on Friday
wonderful.
Morning.
Wonderful. Yeah. Northern Corridor. People say, oh, well, you know, the Zone 6 and this, that, and the other thing. Zone 6 is a highly popular recreation area on the west side of Bloomington off Navajo Drive.
Mm-hmm.
We... Hats off to State Trust Lands, who own 3,300. When I say own, they manage 3,300 acres. The BLM threw in theirs. We had 6,800 acres, some of which a private inholding we bought. Anyway, to trade for 158 acres, that would have been the Northern Corridor. Now, right. do you think that's a fair trade? Andy, I'm going to give you $6,800.
It's not fair for you guys, actually.
And so then we were getting the bad rap, people saying, oh, because State Trust Lands has a right to develop that property. And they put it out there for an RFP of who would like to, you know, submit plans for homes or whatever.
Yeah.
They're still willing to leave that as recreation space. But their mandate is different from ours.
They got to make money.
State Trust Lands has one thing that they have to do, and that is generate income off of properties that were given to them back at statehood. Point being is that we're not the villains here. We want to save that. Conserve Southwest Utah has launched a huge campaign of misinformation about the corridor, about the effect on tortoise. They don't care about the tortoise, not one bit. They care about a win, and that is stopping a government from building a road through a national conservation area. But the Unique Lands Bill of 2009, you've heard this before, said that the Department of Interior shall designate a route. Because back then we knew we were having problems getting east to west. And we can't put it all on Boulevard. We can't put it all on our other auxiliary roads, including I-15, and get people from one side of the county to the other. The Northern Corridor is a beautiful drive. There's not going to be development on each side. They say, oh, yeah, sure, yeah, you lie. No, that's, you can't just put up apartments and commercial zones along there, because mm-hmm. that would violate the conservation area. But a road, which was mandated, is simply to move traffic and keep our clean air, for one. But it's going to be a beautiful road.
In Salt Lake, they have had to address all, you know, you got the Legacy Highway and Bangor, which used to be a stop sign or a stoplight road, and they're turning yes. that into pretty much a freeway. And, you know, you have all these different things they've had to address. And I'm sure they've had to battle some of these environmental things as well. But they realize, I think, that the leaders there go, look, we got to have this or we're in trouble. Salt Lake already has a major problem with pollution because yes. of the inversion and the valley that traps the dirty air in there and everything. And you know, we have the maybe not lake inversion type stuff here, but we have the potential for a lot of pollution if we don't figure out a way to fix the problem.
Cars moving pollute a lot less than cars idling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And engines are not efficient at idling, and so you get a lot more pollution. And luckily, we are right on the verge of somebody saying, well, you're going to have emission controls. You're going to have this, which would be dictated to by Clean Air Act, et cetera. We're right on the verge of needing that, and we don't want to go there.
Yeah.
And Salt Lake doesn't want to force us there either. They say, do something else. Well, this road is one of those.
I remember, so I lived in northern Utah as a teenager and then went to college at Utah, ended up at BYU and then at Utah State. And we always had to have emissions tests on our cars.
Yeah.
And I remember moving to southern Utah and, you know, I got my inspection, which you don't have to have that anymore either, but got my inspection. And then I said, all right, where do I go for the emissions test? And they're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah,
I said, the emissions test. No, we don't have that here. I was like, really?
Yeah. And I feel for the people up in Green Springs who say, well, that road's right going to be behind my house, and I would hate it too. We did not push that road close to your homes, not the county design, the engineers, the road planners. UDOT is really the lead in this. We did not do that. What happened was the biologists and those from the Conservative Southwest and others forced that road closer to behind your homes, not us.
All right, well, we do need to get a weather break in. We've got more to talk about with Gil Almquist. He's county commissioner representing Washington County. How long have you been a commissioner now?
This is the beginning of my seventh year.
Seven years.
And I feel like your first term, you learn, you get your feet wet, you start to understand the system. Your second one, you start to make some real move, and there's a lot of things still hanging out there. I'll run again. But three terms seems to be where you make the most impact, and then somebody else ought to have a chance.
Sweet spot is term number three, maybe, huh?
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll get there, right? That's the plan. Let's do this. Let's check weather and get a couple of commercials in, and we'll have more with Gil Almquist right after this.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. Let's talk water here on the Andy Griffin Show. I've got County Commissioner Gil Almquist with me. We were talking water during the commercial break, but you couldn't hear it, so we'll talk about it. Now, first of all, these storms, a little disappointing to me because they didn't bring that much moisture. They were wet, and wet is good. I'm not complaining. I'm not saying, hey, don't storm. I'm saying, man, I wish it would have rained more instead of just kind of, what was that even? Mist, spritz, sprinkle, whatever.
Yes.
But having said that, we are improving in certain areas. Tell us about it.
Well, there was a, there were a couple of weeks where we fell below 20% snowpack.
Wow.
And that's what we measure. So rain in the valley, nice. Snow in the mountains, critical.
Right.
And then it jumped to 29. If you recall, about a month ago, we had a storm come through.
Yeah, and that's, those were kind of the numbers I was working with the last few weeks. 29%. Well, that's pretty bad, but
still bad.
Nothing.
And then just reported last night at a water district get-together with some Colorado River Authority folks and Department of Natural Resources from Salt Lake. They reported 54% from
these
storms.
We're almost failing.
We're going to pass the class.
Yeah.
But I can see barely a little of from here, Pine Valley Mountain. And it's getting white. And yet the final numbers of what we got in the even last 24 hours, which was a little more.
Yeah.
You know, we might pop 60%, but we need it to be 100% of normal to deal with a, you know, summer ahead.
Well, the good news is, okay, the snowpack's not where it should be, but the reservoirs are in pretty good shape right now.
Yes. You know, the water district announced several years ago a 20-year plan. We're 18 years to go in it, but the plan was to conserve water, to reuse, to set that up and put in pipelines and some new reservoirs, which are, you know, pull your hair to get those built sometimes when you're dealing with federal I want to say federal partners, but I don't know if you have that kind of partner, it might be better to be single.
All you have to do is say NEPA and we know what you're talking about struggle wise.
That turned into from a recommendation document to a now policy, and it's just horrible. But but nevertheless, our reservoirs, Sand Hollow is way up there. I drove by the other day. I can't give you the exact number, but we're close to 90% full there. Quail is coming up beautifully, and the plan is don't release so much water that you can't replace it from the snowpack you have. the balance there, which they're always working on a daily basis, is how much water can we count on? How much do we have? Then let's make reasonable releases. So one, we can hold the water if we need to, but two, don't be hoping for water come July.
Yeah. Just, was it, plan as if there's not going to be any coming.
Yeah.
And if some comes, cool.
All the better.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Plan for the worst, prepare for the worst, plan for the best and hope.
Yeah.
And yeah. Okay. So, all right. Now, do you know anything about how far we are? I heard there are some holdups with the Chief Toker Reservoir. Are we okay there? What's going on with that one?
They, excuse me. They stayed in areas that were not subject to any more inspection or reservation by building, one, cutting the keystone for the dam itself, which mm-hmm. is in bedrock. And they, you know, just like any smart construction project, you want a good foundation. So that's done. The dirt, you can see from I-15, is somewhat piled up, which will eventually go up against that structure. But without too many details, whether it was Army Corps of Engineers or if it was Federal Fish and Wildlife, I'm not sure, but they said, oh, we have a little area of concern we want to study. And my understanding is that area, which could have been a wetland or a potential wetland, it's not a historic thing or a issue from that side, but... as it was explained to me, you're saying, well, wait, if it is a wetland or a partial wet area, that's going to be inundated anyway. So
water.
Why are we studying that when we know it's going to be drowned, so to speak?
Yeah.
That has been a holdup, but I think we're making some tremendous progress there. Something I learned just last night, though, was I drove down there just on a in county vehicle just to kind of to give an on-site inspection while I was in the neighborhood. And I said, man, there's so much material in here that could be used by contractors, by others. And if you take stuff out of a reservoir, dirt, et cetera, that only increases the capacity.
Right.
Well, I found out last night that the permit given by the BLM did not allow you to do any mining there. I'm thinking, how ridiculous.
Hmm.
So you can't take it out because then you change from a reservoir to a gravel pit. I said, how far have we gone from common sense? And
yeah.
So when we row our boat over the top of that, we say, hey, there's millions of dollars of dirt we could have taken out of here. But the BLM rule says no.
No, because then you're a gravel pit.
And that's something that's going to be my new battle with our senator when he comes on Thursday.
You said something when you first got here talking about agritourism. Agritourism.
Yeah.
What is that? Will you explain that to people and maybe explain how that might affect us here in the county?
A lot of people travel the world to look at different agricultural techniques. Now, it's not going to be my goal. You know, I'd rather see beautiful cathedrals.
Right, but I do appreciate. Cologne, Germany.
Yes. I do appreciate open markets. I appreciate the people that feed us. And here locally, we're finding out that just like they did 160 years ago, this is a great place to grow grapes. And so we have some wineries here, and I say vineyards and wineries. In the general sense, we've never really addressed that much in Utah. So they passed some legislation, which was from Senator Darren Owens, and I actually had it in the car and brought it with me. The goal is that you're able to – oh, I said Darren Owens. Sorry, Doug Owens. Is to provide ordinances that allow for agritourism. So if somebody wants in Leeds to say, I want to have a little wine tasting, or I want to have right by my vineyard, smaller operations right now, we're not going to be turned into France here. But the point being is that it spells out what kinds of things you can have, neighborhood little produce sampling. Wow. And there are a decent number of people we're finding out through our great tourism office that come here just to learn about agriculture and experience it. So, yeah.
So when I was on my trip, we went to a cheese farm.
Sure.
In the Netherlands. That would be, I guess, considered agritourism, right? Because
yes.
We went and saw their cows and saw how they made cheese and then bought some and brought it home. And
it's not my reason to go to Scotland,
right?
But there are whole tours based on whiskey and and you go from one distillery to another.
Scotch.
not that that's our goal here either, but the point being is that there are people that tend to learn about agriculture, and this bill helps local communities to say, because some people might say, well, that's not zoned for that area, that's commercial, but it's an ag land. And we're saying, well, this is a mix between using ag land in a semi-commercial way.
Okay. I kind of like it. That's kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, and with Zion National Park always threatening to have a registration, and you've got to pre-authorize everything, not just Angel's Landing, not just the subway, but I think locally, we've been working with our national parks, but every excuse to have less people. And so we have to broaden our horizon. Agritourism is one of those areas.
Now, you mentioned Zion National Park. I guess there's an update on Zion National Park. Tell us.
Well, we are working with them to get a sewer line and some communication conduit clear up to the Temple of Sinawava from the visitor center.
Oh, wow.
The state put money forward for that. And we have been taking the charge through one of our greatest employees, Heath Hansen, to help the park realize that, if you're not going to do it and you're going to use an excuse to have less people going there, what is your issue? Well, sewer. We solved it for them. And they said, oh, it's going to be $80 million. Well, no, it isn't. That's your federal guess, which was it's too expensive, we're not doing it. But we found that we, through contractors and our own assessment, can do it for much less, like less than 20. But the point being is that that's one more thing that they can't use as an excuse. And so we're leading the way in that. They've lost some employees up there, and I can tell you they can still cover their bases, even though they've lost like 11 employees. Having said that, there's trails that have not been reopened. There are other places you can put people that they're just unwilling to do. And, I see the picture of the Great White Throne behind you there on the wall, one of the classic draws of this area. There's more to that park, and we need to get them to open it up for people to see it.
Do these cutbacks, Doja, are they having a big effect on some of the national stuff? I mean, you mentioned down 11 employees. That's significant, right?
Well, they have a lot of employees.
Yeah.
And quite
too
frankly,
many, according to Doge.
They're probably listening right now, and I'm saying, you know what? I ran a business for 35 years. If you are down a couple of employees, the other six step it up. If you're down two, they could do a lot. And I would hope that nationwide we are saying to everyone, we can be more efficient, we can do more, we don't need to just sit at a desk and study habitat over and over and over. Serving the people that want to see these national parks should be priority, not necessarily making plans to make it harder for them to see them.
Well, that's the old joke about federal government. Well, you get 10 people to do one person's job. And I think, Doge has, the Department of Government Efficiency has gone in and said, look, you two people could do this job that these other, these 10 people are doing if you would actually, do the job instead of, collecting your paychecks and going home at the end of the day.
One thing we analyze every year is budget in the county.
Yeah.
And we look at everything, and I tell people, I said, we were Doge before it was popular because we do want to be as efficient as possible. And if, believe me, call me, 680-9853, if you find some county employees just sitting around. They're not doing that. They are working hard.
Yeah.
And it's part of our goal to make sure your taxpayers are getting the best for their buck. That's not been prevalent amongst federal workers.
Imagine actually being held accountable for the work that you're supposed to do. Imagine having to actually fit a budget into how you have to do things. And that's how we have here in Southern Utah. And the federal government, like I said, has been a running joke. Go get a job with the feds. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah, and they have this uproar over being asked what five things you accomplished the previous week.
Yeah.
You know, what?
Yeah.
That's how businesses run.
And a lot of them couldn't list five things. And the other thing that was trying to accomplish, I think, was are there actually people that work there? It's like a roll call almost. And they found out there were a lot of people didn't even exist, or they had quit years ago or whatever. So, all right, commercial break. More with Gil Almquist. We're talking county lands, and we're going to talk a little bit about who can build where when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
It is Tuesday, the 18th day of March. Hope you had a great St. Patrick's Day and didn't get pinched by anybody. I actually have a story on 890kdxu.com about that and about why green. You know, the original St. Patrick's Day colors were light blue, like the color of your shirt, Gil. But it became political for a while, and political was, there was a song called Wear the Green or something like that, and that turned St. Patrick's Day green. And, of course, you got leprechauns with our green outfits, I guess, and everything. But
Ireland is mostly green.
Yeah, it is. The Emerald Isle, right?
Yes.
It was originally blue, but it changed to green because of politics.
Interesting.
So, anyway, that's over. It's now March 18th, and Gil Almquist is in here with me. We only have 8 or 9 minutes left, Gil. And I think one of the things you had brought up before we went on the air was talking about building. If I wanted to build a commercial venture somewhere out in the county, out by Gunlock or whatever, what's the process of permitting and being able to build a house or a commercial area or an industrial building when it comes to the county?
You know, there's very clear procedures, and we've developed some. Some are dictated by the state, but mostly counties are able to, work with zoning and building and permitting and changing of zoning, quite frankly. And so here in Washington County, we have a checklist. You have to verify certain things that you're going to need. You're going to need power. You're going to need to deal with your sewer. You're going to need to have water and access. And, is it the right zone? A lot of people will say, oh, the county is so hard to work with. Well, when I say a lot, I mean it's really not very many. Most people get done what they need to. But we walk them through it step by step by step of what they will need, a perfect application. The county is only 5% of our total population, really, and we have some land, and we have zoning in, say, Vail and other places, which would allow for certain kind of development. But I just want everyone to understand that when you see a project going in, it's gone through a rigorous pace and steps which are required. It's not willy-nilly. Now, some people might say, well, it's the county, it's the Wild West. Nobody will know if I build a house out here. Well, your neighbor will find out. And they'll say, wait, they didn't get a building permit? Mm-hmm. That's just not going to happen. So I just want the listeners to know we have a rigorous, thorough, fair process for you to build in the county.
I think you feel bad, right? If someone builds something without a permit and they have to take it down or rebuild it or something, you feel bad. And my brother's going through this where he had a neighbor build something on the property next to theirs that was not, it was built too close to the property line and it was too big and everything. And, this neighbor, well, I don't want to have to tear this. It cost me thousands and thousands of dollars. And my brother's kind of stuck. I mean, he feels bad, right? He doesn't want him to have to take it down. But at the same time, they didn't bother to actually consult the authorities on what, where, and what they could do.
Most people will find out that if they come in with something minor, an add-on to their home or something, it's not going to be a delay. We're not the federal government. What we are going to say, though, is you may not always own that. Someone else buys it, and it's not done properly, the electrical, the foundation. They want to be assured that somebody saw how that was built and made sure it was to building code and therefore safe for a future owner or even for the current owner. And that's our process.
You do feel bad sometimes, but yeah, you got to do it the right way, right?
Well, years ago we had somebody said, well, I'm going to cremate animals in Dameron Valley. And, well, you got to have a business license to tell us what's happening there. Is it commercial operation? Well, they were just having animals in bags dropped off and sat in front of their garage for weeks. Would your neighbor not then call the county and say, what's going on? Well, yes. And we solved that. But so you can't just be totally rogue out there, but we don't like to have a heavy hand either. But there are certain neighbors that you ought to respect. Property rights are on both sides of the fence.
By the way, do you know Brandon Hansen?
Yeah, very well. Didn't he just leave?
Lives out by you.
Yes.
And he was telling me he had a raccoon problem last year. I don't know if people know this. You're not allowed to actually just kill a raccoon if it comes in your yard and digs around. That's not legal. And he said he called, maybe it was the county. He called somebody, maybe it was the city, and said, hey, I got these raccoons. What do I do with them? And they're like, well, you can remove them, but you can't kill them. And so he caught the raccoons and was going to move them from his property. Well, he was actually probably planning on getting rid of them. But as he's leaving with these raccoons in the back of his truck, his wife says to him, he says, Brandon, if you kill those raccoons, you're not the kind of man I thought you were.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, he was put in a very awkward position. I cannot tell you the rest of the story because I don't know the rest of the story. But the raccoons were gone for a while.
St. George City is good about their animal control, so it's best if you have that problem to call and see what you can do, like he did.
Yeah.
And then if trapped, then they can be contacted again.
Yeah.
And now what do I do?
Yeah. And don't tell your wife, I guess, or something. I don't know. Okay, we only have 2 minutes left. I did want on that Northern Corridor and the lawsuit and everything. Is there a timeline? Do we have any idea? Is this going to take us a month, 6 months, a year, 5 years? Any idea?
At the end of the Trump administration, which nobody thought was the end, right? We thought he might be reelected, whatever. There was a record of decision granted to go ahead.
Right.
And we still had a few more T's to cross and I's to dot, but it wasn't a big deal. I felt like we should have the very next day, which was in December, go and fire up the bulldozers and do our surveys and remove tortoise that might be in the way and just do a full safety check and et cetera.
Get her done.
And yet come the next, the results were that the Biden administration, day one, put a stop to everything that we wanted to do and others. And so for 4 years, we've waited. Now we're back in the swing of things. We still have this lawsuit to settle. There's a lot of moving parts still, but at least we have people that are willing to listen.
So bottom line, time-wise, we don't know.
We don't know, but you're not going to see this year, maybe even another year. But we're hoping that that it will become a reality in the near future, but not to the day.
Meanwhile, good luck getting from I-15 over to Santa Clara.
Yeah, we're trying to keep that open as best we can, and St. George has been heroic in making sure that the alternative route that was chosen to tear up the Red Hill, what a joke, and they're just not going to do it.
We don't want that. I mean, I've only been here 31 years, but I don't want that. You've been here a little longer.
Yeah, 44.
And you don't want that. I don't think even people that have only been here 5 years want anybody to tear into that Red Hill and put a belt route or whatever it would be up there. I mean, I'm just looking at it right now going, that doesn't fit. That doesn't work. That's not right.
Yeah.
So,
well, to the citizens of the county, come see us. If you hear rumors of things that your evil county is doing, come talk to us. We can explain it. And my door is always open again.
He gave his phone number a minute ago.
680-9853. Call me.
I had someone tell me they weren't comfortable giving my phone number out the other day. I said, I give it out on the radio. I'm sure you're good to give it to whoever. So yes. same thing with Gil here. So
have a wonderful day.
All right, Gil, thanks for coming on today. Great to talk to you.
Thanks.
We'll be back tomorrow. We've got, Chamber of Commerce coming on. We've got Dave Romer later on this week. Nanette Billings, who wants to limit terms in Hurricane City.